From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Do you remember the bicentennial year, 1976? If you don't, let me tell you what happened, at least as seen through the eyes of one cynical high school kid. That year, the United States threw itself a birthday party, even though the house was a mess and the family members weren't talking to each other. And the party turned out to be really rockin'. 1976 began with the country in a dismal funk, but it ended with the country kind of finding its groove. At least, that's how David Brown of Rolling Stone sees it. He'll tell us about the year that America went rock and roll. And tonight's World Cup segment looks at an almost 100-year history of Brazilian songs about soccer. But to begin, singer and songwriter Jenny Lewis made her name as the frontwoman of the popular indie band Rilo Kiley. But that band broke up in 2011, and Jenny has had no problem filling in the hours since. She's toured with the Postal Service, recorded a duo album with Jonathan Rice, and written music for films and TV. This song, in fact, comes from season 3 of the HBO series Girls. But Jenny Lewis has also found the time, finally, to make a solo record. It's her first solo record in 6 years. It's called The Voyager, and it won't be out till the end of July, but Jenny and her band are here to give us a preview, a sort of unplugged preview, in the Soundcheck studio. This is Jenny Lewis with a song called Just One of the Guys.
Getting on, but the girls are still staying young. If I get caught being rude in a conversation with a child bride on a summer vacation, no matter how hard I try to be just one of the guys, there's a little something inside that won't let me. Oh, no matter how hard I try to have an open mind, there's a little voice inside that prevents me. Got me here, locked in this bathroom, full of tears. And I have begged for you, and I have borrowed, but I've been the only sister to my own sorrow. No matter how hard I try that won't let me. Oh, no matter how hard I try to have an open mind, there's a little clock inside that keeps ticking. There's only one difference between you and me. When I look at myself, all I can see, I'm just another lady without a baby. Oh, no matter how hard I try to be just one of the guys, there's a little something inside that that prevents me. I'm not gonna break for you. I'm not gonna pray for you. I'm not gonna pay for you. That's not what ladies do. Oh, oh.
That's Jenny Lewis with a new song called Just One of the Guys. It will appear on her solo album called The Voyager when it comes out in late July. But that's a live performance of it right now here in the Soundcheck studio with Jenny singing and playing guitar, Natalie Prass singing and playing keyboard, and Megan McCormick singing and playing more guitar. Megan in your left channel, Jenny in your right, if you're trying to figure out who's playing what guitar. Jenny Lewis, welcome to Soundcheck.
Megan is by far the better guitar player, so that's the way you'll know.
But you've got the rainbow guitar.
It's
got
true.
The psychedelic guitar.
I've got the Lisa Frank barfed all over my guitar.
So this is, The Voyager is your first solo record in 6 years. That probably wasn't by plan, was it?
It wasn't. I had been cranking out almost a record a year for a very long time, 8 or 10 years. And with this particular one, it took some doing. It took a little time, which is fine.
Well, and there were lots of things going on, you know, the band Rilo Kiley breaking up. I know your father passed away at one point.
Yeah.
And then there were all these other things. We heard a little bit of the song you did for Girls, but two film projects. There's the Anne Hathaway movie called Song One that you wrote songs for, and this film called Very Good Girls coming out in July as well. How different a process was that for you to write songs that, especially in the case of Song One, you weren't going to play?
It was really liberating in a way, because I think as a songwriter, if you're writing only for yourself, you can kind of get stuck in certain patterns of writing, mm-hmm. or you have certain rules with your own work. But I think when you're writing for a character, for a film, you're kind of free in a way to explore different themes. It was really a great exercise, especially at a time when I was trying to write for my own record and I couldn't. It was just sort of affirmation that I could still write songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the exercise of sitting down to write is really important.
Right. I mean, and writers, you know, authors will talk about, you know, when you have writer's block, just sit down and write something.
Anything.
You know, it doesn't matter what.
It doesn't have to be good.
Right.
Well, in the case of Song One, I hope the songs are
I've heard those songs. And Johnny Flynn, the English singer-songwriter who plays a character named, is it James Forrester?
Yes.
Sings these songs and delivers them brilliantly, but they're really cool songs. And you and Jonathan Rhys wrote them, right?
We did. And, you know, we're American songwriters,
right.
Despite Jonathan Rhys, his family's from Glasgow. Johnny Flynn is an English singer-songwriter. So to write something with a very American perspective and then have an English folk singer sing it, he did such a beautiful job and kind of flipped the songs in a way that we would never have done.
So was this – you said it was at a time where you felt like you just – your own record just wasn't happening. Did this somehow break through? Did this – you know, whatever wall had been built, did this knock a hole in it?
It did. It really did. And to work with Jonathan Rhys, and we've worked together over the years, it kind of brought me back to life a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there actually – there's a song on The Voyager that I submitted for Song One, and it got rejected, which we were sad about at the time. But when I went in to record with Ryan Adams for The Voyager, I had this song lying around, and I reworked it to be one of my own tunes,
mm-hmm.
kind of made it a little weirder. And it ended up on my record.
Which one was that?
The New You.
The New You, okay. Well, people will get a chance to hear that and the rest of the album when it comes out at the end of July. Ryan Adams produced much of the record, right?
Most
of it. And he has his own studio, so had you worked with him before, ever?
No. We had hung out a couple of times, a couple late-night jams at my house, where he, you know, sang songs about cats and aliens. And I heard that he had opened this analog studio on the Sunset Strip. And I was desperate to find a spirit guide, really. Mm. And so I reached out to him, and he said, yeah, come on down. And one song became 12 very quickly.
Now, how you went out, I mean, not that you went way out of your way, but you went out of your way to say an analog studio. How important was that to you?
Well, for me, I don't have any rules when I'm recording. I record demos on GarageBand. I've recorded records all tape before. But for Ryan, it's very important. And I think when you're working with a producer, you embrace their philosophy. And he's got a lot of rules, or at least while he was recording me, he had a lot of rules about what we couldn't do. And for me, I think the parameters were really important to kind of help me move forward. And Ryan is not a revisionist. Mm-hmm. He just records and records and doesn't listen back. And that's kind of what I needed.
All right. So the results, the album called The Voyager by Jenny Lewis, coming out on July 29th. So these are songs that, you know, obviously have gestated for a while, some of them coming at kind of rough periods in your life. And, I mean, going back to the idea of writing for a character, for example, that song, Just One of the Guys, is that a character or is that Jenny Lewis? I mean,
there are a couple of things that resonate in that song.
Yeah, you've got a woman singing about hearing that ticking clock, you know, a woman without a baby, and I mean, is that?
Yeah, that's
a thing right now.
That could be. Yeah, I'm 38.
Yeah,
that clock is. You can hear that clock ticking, actually.
So these are, you know, I mean, that can be a tough thing to put yourself in songs like that, because then people assume that everything in all the songs is you, is autobiographical. Is that the case with this record?
No, it's not. And it would be far less interesting if that were the case. But I think in every song that I've written, and I've written a lot of character-based songs, there's always a little nugget of me in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's from my perspective.
So when filmgoers finally get to see song one and get to see Johnny Flynn performing as James Forrester, there's a little nugget of Jenny Lewis in there.
Oh, yeah. More than a little nugget. But it's great as a female songwriter to write for a man.
Oh, yeah. That hadn't even occurred to me.
I hadn't done that before.
The reverse happens all the time.
Yes. So I felt kind of like a master puppeteer.
You were the puppet master, yes. Good for you. You want to play the title track from the new record for us?
Sure.
In a few minutes?
Yeah, do you mind if we warm up with this old song first?
Yeah. So one of the things that you did back in 2006 was a record with the Watson Twins.
Yes.
Called Rabbit Fur Coat. So you want to play something from that first?
Sure.
All right. Jenny Lewis performing for us here in the Soundcheck studio. And once again, this song called Rise Up With Fists.
What are you changing? Who do you think you're changing? You can't change things. We're all stuck in our ways. It's like trying to clean the ocean. What do you think you can drain it? Well, it was poison and dry long before you came. But you can wake up younger under the knife. And you can wake up sounder if you get analyzed. And I better wake up there but for. Hard to believe your prophets when they're asking you to change things, but with their suspect lives, we look the other way. Are you really that pure, sir? Thought I saw you in Vegas. It was not pretty, but she was.
But she was.
cops are at my front door, and I can't escape that way. The windows are in flames, and what's that on your ankle? You say they're not coming for you, but house arrest is really just the same. Like when you wake up behind the bar, trying to remember where you are, having crushed all the pretty things, there but for the grace of God go I. But
Jenny Lewis with a song called Rise Up With Fists. Live performance here on Soundcheck with Megan McCormick on guitar and backing vocals, Natalie Prass on piano and backing vocals, playing for us here today on Soundcheck. And we're getting a chance to preview some songs from the forthcoming album called The Voyager by Jenny Lewis, which is out on July 29th. Let's hear that title track. Once again, a live performance on Soundcheck.
By the time I got your letter, I lost my mind. I was tripping. When you're getting better, it's a jagged line. But nothing lasts forever when you travel time. I've been sipping that Kool-Aid at the Cosmo. Cause the Voyager's in every boy and girl. If you wanna get to heaven, get out of this world. The Voyager's in every boy and girl. When it finally hit me, I did not cry. If you wanna get to heaven,
That is the title track from the forthcoming Jenny Lewis album called The Voyager. The album comes out on July 29th, but you've heard the song played live here today in the Soundcheck studio. Once again, Jenny Lewis singing and playing guitar, Megan McCormick singing and playing guitar, Natalie Prass singing and playing our piano. The album comes out on July 29th, and Jenny, we are hearing kind of unplugged, stripped-down versions of the songs. I mean, on the record, there's a lot of... There are a couple of songs that have more of an electric guitar rock edge to them. This song has kind of a big string section to it.
It does, yeah.
So it seems like there's, you know, kind of sonically a lot of territory being covered on this. You know, you've got a couple of ballad-type things. Some of the songs actually kind of reminded me of, you know, Fleetwood Mac in their golden years in the late 70s. Were you, I mean, over the course of making this record for 6 years, you know, is that just naturally going to be a reflection of what you listen to?
Well, the record was recorded, there are three different sessions on the record. So the bulk of the record I recorded with Ryan at PacSam.
Ryan Adams, right.
Beck produced one song, just one of the guys. And then Jonathan Rice and I produced the two other ones that are a little more Mac Attack, as we like to say.
Really? So
yeah.
So Fleetwood Mac was sort of in your mind's ear when you were...
It always is.
Really?
I'm a big McVie fan.
Okay. Which McVie, Christine or John?
Well, both, but come on.
Okay.
You know,
Christy.
Right. Or we can call her Christy now.
So the album also begins, I mean, there's a lot of striking imagery. I mean, the Voyager has, you know, the idea that, you know, you got to get out of this world if you want to get to heaven. But the album begins with this song called Head Underwater, which mentions things like being hypnotized and stuff. I mean... To go back to what we were talking about before, have you been hypnotized?
I have. I was struggling with terrible insomnia for about 2 years, and I was so desperate to find anything that would help me get back to sleep that I tried everything. I was hypnotized. I did neurofeedback. I saw a therapist. I did yoga. I met a woman who... did Reiki, who just sort of put her hands near me and then wrote on little note cards what I was going through. And then I kind of realized that in order to get to sleep, you kind of have to let go a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying too hard to get back to sleep. So once I finally was able to do that, then I finally got back to sleep.
So you went through all these increasingly weird things.
Yes.
And then stopping and saying, the hell with it, is what got you to sleep.
Ultimately, just like watching boxing in the middle of the night got me back to sleep. So I'd like to thank Floyd Mayweather for that.
Really?
I was.
Floyd Mayweather is one of the few boxers I might actually stay awake to watch.
Well, he's the best. And in his weight, he's the best. He's the best fighter, I
Pound
think.
For pound, probably.
Pound for pound, yeah.
So, but he put you to sleep.
He put me to sleep.
All
Thanks,
right,
Floyd.
Well.
Love you.
All right. So we've got the new album coming out, The Voyager, at the end of July. July is also when we're supposed to see Very Good Girls, right?
Yes.
The film with, it's Elizabeth Olsen and...
Dakota Fanning.
Dakota Fanning.
And Ellen Barkin.
And you wrote songs for that as well. Did you play the songs for this film, or is someone else doing that?
Well, Elizabeth Olsen plays a young songwriter in Brooklyn. So the director is a friend of mine. I'm friends with her kids, Jake and Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Aha.
Aha, the connections in Hollywood. And so we talked a lot about what kind of songs Elizabeth's character would be writing within her first 10 songs. So I tried to kind of put myself back into that teenage frame of mind, state of mind. And so the songs, it was cool again to be able to write from a different perspective.
And were you able to tap into the 18-year-old Jenny Lewis?
I mean, I hope so. Certainly, I can remember what it was like to be 18 years old.
Yeah.
It's pretty rough.
Yeah. So a busy summer for Jenny Lewis, but she and the band have been playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. The album's called The Voyager, out on July 29th. The film is Very Good Girls. It's out in July as well. Jenny, real pleasure to have you here. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
I beg your pardon, I'm not looking for I've seen enough of my friends in the depths of the godsick blues. You know I am a liar. You know
later in the show, we talk with music writer David Brown about his recent deep dive into the music of 1976, a year that not only marked our nation's bicentennial, but also a major shift in music and pop culture. But in a moment, the World Cup. It officially begins tomorrow in Brazil with a match between the host nation and Croatia. And in a moment, we'll take a listen to some Brazilian music written specifically about soccer. That's next on Soundcheck.
Quero morrer numa batucada de bamba, na cadência bonita do samba. Eu quero morrer numa batucada de bamba, na cadência bonita do samba.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. All this week, we're looking at the music of Brazil, the host nation of this year's World Cup. The tournament starts tomorrow, but Brazilians have been singing about soccer for almost 100 years. This song in the background is called Na Cadência do Samba, and several generations of Brazilians have grown up associating this song with the game. It's got an alternate title which translates How Beautiful It Is, and as you may know, Brazilians call soccer the beautiful game. But this was not written as a soccer song, it just kind of got swept up in Brazil's constant football fever. But you don't have to look very far to find some of Brazil's most famous musicians actually writing songs about the sport, and sometimes even about a single game. Listen. This song was written in 1919 by Pixinguinha, who would become one of Brazil's greatest songwriters of the 20th century. This was one of his first big hits, and it's now considered a standard. It's called 1-0, or in English, 1-0, or in soccer English, 1-0. That was the score in that year's South American Championship game. Brazil 1, Uruguay 0. It was a big deal. And almost 100 years later, the song is still a big deal. Uma Zero, 1-0, by the triumphant Brazilian composer Pixinguinha. Some of these Brazilian soccer songs are pretty well-traveled. There's a popular tune called Fla Flu that's been recorded by several American musicians. Fla is Flamengo, and Flu is Fluminense, two soccer clubs in Rio de Janeiro. Their crosstown rivalry is a thing of legend. Here's the American mandolinist Mike Marshall with his version of the song. Flu, a song about a fierce football rivalry in Rio. Many Brazilians and quite a few musicians outside Brazil can play these songs about soccer, and, you know, you can just look at it as Brazilians celebrating the beautiful game and the beautiful way in which they play it. Nothing scary about that. But if you're Argentina, or Germany, or Spain, and you've gone to Brazil thinking you have a chance to win the World Cup on Brazilian soil, there is one song you do not want to hear them singing.
A taça do mundo é nossa, com brasileiro não há quem possa. Eita, esquadrão de ouro, é bom do samba, é bom do povo. O brasileiro lá do estrangeiro mostrou o futebol como é que é. Ganhou a taça do mundo,
It's called A Taça do Mundo é Nossa, which means the World Cup is ours. It was written after Brazil won its first World Cup in 1958, and it had a big revival in 1962, and wouldn't you know it, the Brazilians won the cup again. So we'll wrap up this little segment with a musical warning to all the other countries at this year's World Cup. This is Coral da Copa, or the Cup Coral, singing The World Cup is Ours. And to the rest of you, good luck. Up next, 1976 was a big year politically, technologically, and musically. We'll talk with writer David Brown about what was in the air that year, from Patti Smith to Boston. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Early 1976. Gerald Ford was bumbling his way through the presidency. Laverne and Shirley and the $6 million man ruled the small screen. And Frampton Comes Alive was the biggest thing in rock. All of that was about to change, and the country would never be the same. Here to tell us why is David Brown, contributing editor at Rolling Stone. His new Amazon Kindle single is called The Spirit of 76, From Politics to Technology, The Year America Went Rock and Roll. David, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Glad to be here, John.
First things first, what is an Amazon Kindle single? I mean, I read the thing, you know, as a PDF file
there
on
you
my
go.
Email, but I don't know what this is.
Absolutely. I'll explain. It is a sort of a mini book that is an electronic book. It's an e-book. It's not a print version. And it is sold by Amazon, but you can read it on any number of devices, not just a Kindle, but a BlackBerry or your phone or all kinds of things. So it is my first venture into this world. I'm
so
excited about it.
It is to an e-book what a single is to an album.
That's exactly right. An appropriate analogy.
All right. So we're talking about 1976. It was, of course, the bicentennial.
Absolutely.
You know, we had the tall ships and New York City Harbor and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Despite which, it was not a particularly optimistic time in this country.
It wasn't. We were still kind of coming out of a recession. Unemployment was a little bit higher than most people wanted. Gerald Ford wasn't, as you mentioned, the most inspiring president, perhaps. But I think there was something brewing that year. And, you know, it first kind of occurred to me when Steve Jobs died, and I was reading all those tributes and obits, as we all did, and I was reminded that Apple launched in 1976.
Yeah, that's really – to think of that happening that far back is pretty amazing.
It was amazing. And I immediately – just seeing the number, I guess, 1976, immediately triggered all these memories in my brain. Like many of us, we have one of those kind of brains, you know.
Yeah.
I really thought, all right, that was the year Jimmy Carter got elected president. That was the year the first Ramones album. I had a vague memory of Saturday Night Live really kind of coming alive right at that moment.
Well, you begin your Amazon Kindle single talking about Saturday Night Live,
right,
and the huge surprise when they walked off with all these awards.
Yeah, at the Emmy Awards in that spring. They walked off with four of them, including some of the major categories, variety show and all that. And it was a very symbolic win because they won over things like the Carol Burnett Show, which represented the kind of the mainstream
yep.
establishment, kind of Squaresville TV of the time. And so for Saturday Night Live, which was steeped in rock and roll and drug jokes and all this stuff, to kind of come somewhat out of nowhere and take the top prize – was, I think, in a way, the beginning of a really interesting year in which you saw rock and roll culture become the culture. And I think that's the thing that ties all of this together. Jimmy Carter was kind of a rock and roll president. You know, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were like these LSD-taking Dylan junkies, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
They were punks who were doing computers instead of music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was a year in which it seemed like the country kind of for a moment there decided like, hey, let's be a can-do country. Let's try new things and do different things. And it's almost mind-boggling to imagine that now.
And as David Brown writes in his piece, The Spirit of 76, comedy was now officially the new rock.
Repeat after me. I would like to feed your fingertips.
To feed your fingertips.
To the Wolverines.
To the Wolverines.
Next, I am afraid.
I am afraid.
We are out.
We are out.
A Badgers.
A Badgers.
Would you accept a Wolverine?
A Wolverine.
In its place.
In its place.
Next, Haynet exclaimed.
Haynet exclaimed.
Let's boil. The Wolverine.
The Wolverines.
It makes no sense even now to a bunch of like stone teenagers watching Saturday right. Night Live in 1976. Heads were exploding.
It really was. It was that whole, if you grew up in that period, you were probably reading like National Lampoon and listening to Cheech and Chong records or whatever, you know. And it was that sort of hip counterculture humor on TV, you know, which we hadn't really seen before. We take that for granted now, like that sort of sensibility is in the air so much. But back then, it was really a shocking thing.
That was the first ever sketch from Saturday
That's
Night
right.
Live.
That's right.
Featuring writer Michael O'Donohue and the late John Belushi as language instructor and student, respectively. And one of the other points to make about SNL is, first of all, it wasn't called Saturday Night Live
right.
back then. But already at that point, it was becoming a kind of, one of those gatekeepers for the culture, because that's
right.
where you found music
right.
that you weren't hearing on mainstream radio.
Totally. I mean, it was even shocking to me, or surprising, at least in my research, to look back at that first season, 75 into 76 and then into the fall of 76, and see the lineup of guests, you know, Patti Smith, Gil Scott-Heron, you know, Loudon Wainwright, Randy Newman. These were not people, you know, you saw on TV ever.
Yeah.
You know?
My first exposure to Gil Scott-Heron was that Saturday Night Live wow. performance of Johannesburg. And it was just like, what is this?
I know.
What planet did this guy drop in from? But you mentioned Patti Smith. And, you know, she was certainly not unknown to those of us who were,
right.
you know, on... In the lower Manhattan, CBGBs and places like that.
Right.
But this was like big exposure for her.
It was. To be the musical guest, and she was the guest on a show of it was called, as you say, NBC's Saturday Night, hosted by Ron Nessen, who was Gerald Ford's press secretary. That alone in that spring was mind-boggling that, you know, here's a show that repeatedly mocked Ford, and yet his press secretary was the host. That was an acknowledgement in a way, like this was the buzz show at the time.
Right. And this was one of the buzz records of that year, 1976, from Patti Smith.
He's at the stadium. Ooh, 20,000 girls call the name out to me. Marie, Ruth, but I tell you that show. I didn't hear them. I didn't see. I let my eyes ride to the big tower clap, and I heard those
Smith. Gloria.
That was the actual song she performed on Saturday Night Live that night. Kind of amazing.
David Brown's with us on Soundcheck, contributing editor at Rolling Stone and Men's Journal, and author of Fire and Rain, The Beatles, Simon and Garfunkel, James Taylor, CSNNY, and The Lost Story of 1970. Now he's writing about 1976. His Amazon Kindle single is called The Spirit of 76, From Politics to Technology, The Year America Went Rock and Roll. In fact, you can easily draw a line, and you do, David, from the comedy of Saturday Night Live to the alternative, the emerging rock movement in Lower Manhattan.
Right. I mean, there was a physical link in that some of the Saturday Night Live people like Belushi would go down to CBGB's. And, yeah, it was also the year when sort of rock and roll became more rock and roll. You know, Peter Frampton was the big mainstream breakout star of the year, but it was really what was happening downtown, Patti, and then the Ramones album that came out that spring, that really, you know, took it back again to kind of its roots and its early days. It kind of blew away all of that, you know, post-60s singer-songwriter prog rock stuff, which was great for a while there, but sort of outstayed its welcome, both those genres. And we needed something new, and here it came, kind of out of nowhere. And nobody wanted it at first, but it came to conquer.
And ironically, I mean, you mentioned before, and you write in the article, how the counterculture became the culture.
Right.
But when that happens, you kind of inevitably have a sort of sanding of the rough edges, you know?
Right.
Whereas the Ramones were all rough edges.
They were. And you know, even though that first album was not a huge hit, the impact, we're still feeling it to this day. The number of bands that they influenced, and that's the sound that they brought in, and you know, there was nothing sanded down about that.
One of the songs you write about in the article is this one from the Ramones called "Beat on the Brat."
Beat on the brat, beat on the brat, beat on the brat with a baseball bat. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho. Beat on the brat, beat on the brat, beat on the brat with a baseball bat. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho.
The Ramones, Beat on the Brat, from 1976. That, too, was part of the spirit of 76 in America, a time that David Brown has written about in his piece, The Spirit of 76, From Politics to Technology, the year America went rock and roll, and we went rock and roll all the way to the White House. How was Jimmy Carter the first rock and roll president?
You know, it's... we're living in a time now where we know what's on President Obama's iPod.
Right.
You know, look, there's Jay-Z songs and whatever. But we're talking about a time in 1976 when Carter was a largely unknown Southern governor. But in his acceptance speech at the Democratic Convention, he quoted Dylan lyrics from It's All Right, Ma. He was known for hanging out with the Allman Brothers. They did benefits for him. He would name drop rock songs in interviews. And, you know, again, these days, not that unusual. Mm-hmm. Back then, he seemed like the hippest, coolest rock and roll guy.
Because we still had Watergate in our rearview mirror. And here's guy, you know, who's traveling in very different circles.
Yeah, he's campaigning. He's wearing blue jeans. His hair was a little longer. He had that sort of the wet head is dead, you know, shag that was in all those commercials. He looked like a very different kind of politician, which is one of the reasons he just eked by and won. He promised to have more integrity and so forth and blow away the Nixon years and so forth. And again, yeah, he grew up in that rock and roll culture. In fact, even in 74, 2 years earlier, when Dylan and the band did their big tour, Carter had them over to his mansion, you know, to kind of
the governor's mansion.
The governor's mansion, yeah. And of course, that probably made some people suspicious of Carter when he was hanging out with Greg Allman, but, you know, it did.
Well, didn't hurt him that much.
Didn't hurt him.
Jimmy Carter, as David Brown just told us, quotes Bob Dylan in 1976 in his Democratic presidential nomination acceptance speech.
My vision of this nation and its future has been deepened and matured during the 19 months that I've campaigned among you for president. I've never had more faith in America than I do today. We have an America that, in Bob Dylan's phrase, is busy being born, not busy dying.
Pointed threats they bluff with scorn. Suicide remarks are torn from the fool's gold mouthpiece. The hollow horn plays wasted words, proves to warn that he not busy being born is busy dying.
Now, over the years, that particular quote from Bob Dylan, you know, if you're not busy being born, you're busy dying. That's become pretty popular. But in 1976, right. for, you know, a presidential candidate to be quoting that was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and a nighttime, you know, network televised acceptance speech.
Yeah. So let's talk Rocky.
Okay.
Not the musical, but the original film, because that, too, was part of the can-do spirit of 76.
Oh, I think, yeah, absolutely. It came out at the very end of the year, and I think it absolutely embodied that that sort of revived spirit. It was a total underdog story. And, you know, it's fascinating to watch it now, as I did again, and just see what a sort of – it seems like an indie movie now. You know, it, and it
well,
sort of was.
It?
It sort of was. You know, they had to finance it themselves, and – people would only producers were only interested in studios were only interested in if somebody else other than Stallone starred in it, and he stuck to his guns and said, no, I want to do it. So they had to raise the money themselves and so forth. And you know, he seems in retrospect too like very much of that moment. I thought, I couldn't help but thinking of Springsteen and Born to Run around that time. That
sure.
same kind of working class blue collar guy working hard and getting rewarded and embodying that sort of revived American spirit.
And, you know, the theme song, I mean, we should say Eye of the Tiger associated with Rocky would come later.
Right, right.
The original movie had that Bill
Condon. Let's go old school.
Yeah, with the orchestra and everything and maybe a little hint of disco,
absolutely.
Which was also in the air as well. The song, of course, is Gonna Fly Now. Cheese-tastic goodness is the theme from Rocky.
If all of you could just have seen John smiling when that that choir came in.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? It was a very calculated kind of uplifting musical moment at a time that the country was ready for such a thing.
Totally ready for it. I often wonder, I asked a few people in my research, would this movie have been as big if it had come out a couple of years ago? Because the movies of the early 70s were sort of dark, you know, with thinking of
Shaft.
Conversation and Shaft and all the President's Men,
which was
early
70s.
French Connection.
Yeah.
I mean, they were very kind of cynical views of the world. And Rocky, I think, was the start of a whole wave of, you know, you could trace all kinds of Star Wars or whatever to that Saturday Night Fever and so forth.
But, yeah. We're speaking with David Brown, contributing editor at Rolling Stone and Men's Journal. He's written about the music of 1970 in the past, and now he's written about the spirit of 76, when America went rock and roll. You mentioned before, incredible as it may seem, that Steve Jobs, the first Apple computer, is 1976.
Right.
In your article, you pair that with one of the big hit records of 1976.
Absolutely, which was More Than a Feeling by Boston.
Why are those two peas in a pod?
I think one of the themes in 76, and I think you see it in like the Ramones, and you certainly see it with these tech guys, it was kind of like the revenge of the geek.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe even saw that a little bit with Saturday Night Live, you know, with some of those cast members too. And I think it was in technology, you know, you saw these guys, kind of gadget electronics freaks, basically leading the way into the future, and More Than a Feeling was basically, in many ways, a one-man band, and that man being Tom Scholz, the guitarist, songwriter, producer, the auteur of the whole band, and his day job was a Polaroid researcher, and he was a gadgets freak. He even helped build his own home studio and so forth. That was again a new type of guy in rock and roll. It was a merging of the technology and gadgets and electronics with the music, which was an interesting new twist. And I think there is a bond there between you know, Steve Jobs, who kind of looked like a rock star, and Tom Scholz, who was an electronic guy who was a rock star, and they kind of all merged together.
And this song, you know, really was kind of crafted from technology. I mean, there was certainly there was some kind of burst of inspiration behind it.
Right.
But, you know, this thing was like meticulously put together in the studio in a way that no record had been done before.
It's true. I mean, Scholz played most of the instruments himself. He played them all except the drums, and he pieced it together little by little. It was like an Erector set construction thing. And even just the sound of that, of the whole Boston album, and it was this, you know, big radio-friendly, happy, upbeat, power chord-driven thing. It wasn't a moody, sulky kind of music record at all.
Right.
And I think it also, maybe that's part of the reason it connected with people, too, at that moment. People really wanted something like that.
Huge, huge, omnipresent record from the band Boston.
I woke up this morning.
The Feeling from 1976, the self-titled debut album by Boston. And, you know, we are still feeling the effects of that record. You know, Kurt Cobain famously ascribed that song to the, you know, as the basis for Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit.
That's true.
You know, just changed one chord and sort of created his own new song.
That's true.
That song is still on classic rock radio. It's used in TV commercials. What else, David, from 1976 has stayed with us?
Well, so much of it. I mean, certainly Apple Computers has, and they kind of ruled the world. You know, punk rock, and certainly the Ramones, even though they're not super, they were never superstars. I mean, I still see kids walking around with those Ramones T-shirts and the Eagle logo like all the time. And in fact, as recently as a couple of years ago, one of the big T-shirt makers told me that it was the Stones, Pink Floyd, and the Ramones as far as the order of best-selling merch for that company. Certainly Saturday Night Live is now, you know, beyond an institution. And even more so, like, if you look at Lorne Michaels, the original producer of the show, who's still there, you know, his mentoring of people like Seth Meyers and Jimmy Fallon. I mean, he rules late night and even like the comic sensibility of our time. So, you know, so much of that year, even though, you know, in a way there's a certain sense of lost promise with that year and so many of the things, you know, what happened with Jimmy Carter being a one-term president and so forth. And certain people, maybe Steve Jobs, became the people they weren't supposed to be in later life.
He became the thing that he was sort of reacting to at
exactly.
first.
Exactly. And you could even say that of some of the Saturday Night Live, the original cast members, given some of the later movies they did. There was a certain sense of lost promise about that year. But if you look at the big picture, the impact, you know, the things that have stayed with us in that year, you know, really outweigh all the unfulfilled promise of that year.
The year was 1976, and David Brown writes about it in The Spirit of 76, From Politics to Technology, The Year America Went Rock and Roll. It is available now as an Amazon Kindle single. David, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Always a pleasure, John. Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow on the show, the New York-based indie rockers People Get Ready have a new album on the way that expands their sound world to include things like 1970s electronic music and a few other surprises. They'll play live. Plus, singer-songwriter Loudon Wainwright III joins us to talk about his new one-man show, Surviving Twin. It's currently playing at the West Side Theater and is billed as a posthumous collaboration with his late father, Loudon Wainwright Jr., the esteemed Life magazine columnist, and features both music and spoken word. That's tomorrow on the show. Eagle Rock is the name of our theme song here at Soundcheck. It was written by Marco Benevento, and you can find out more about him at soundcheck.org. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.